Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, February 17th, 2016. With me today, which should have totally tipped me off that it's Wednesday because it's like our special thing, Kelly Gaumont, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing good and glad to have you here. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I am part two of the John and Kelly show, right here and ready.
Yes, and I'm glad that both of you are here. You guys rock.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah. Hey, you know what doesn't rock? That would be what we're about to start talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the FBI getting a court order that says Apple must give them what's being characterized as a backdoor into iOS.
Now, the headline that went around yesterday for people who may have seen this, my first notice of it was in a ticker on the bottom of the show when they have like the headlines. So the headline was that Apple was ordered to cooperate in this investigation, whatever that means. And this morning, I think we found out a little bit about what that means.
Yes, I read the court order. So to fill everyone in, here's what it says. It says that Apple must create a special version of iOS that shuts off the auto delete feature that happens when you have 10 failed login attempts to a device. And then they must, as part of this, they must also disable the feature that puts delays in when you have a failed login attempt before you can do the next one. And then Apple needs to bundle all this up and provide it in some fashion to the FBI. What the FBI wants is for Apple just to give it to them. Mm-hmm. But they can also set up a computer in their own facilities where this iPhone can be connected. Mm-hmm. And then it just runs a brute force attack on the passcode until they get in. Now, why in the world is the FBI flipping out saying, we need to get into this iPhone? Okay, this is one of the two iPhones that was recovered from the domestic terrorist shooting incident at the San Bernardino County offices back in December. Yeah.
The San Bernardino shooting, which I just looked up the date of, by the way, because I wanted to see why this was suddenly back in the news. It was December 2nd.
Yes. Yes. So
it's been 2.5 months that they've had this phone. And my concern about this is that the FBI is using this iPhone as the wedge to get the thing that they have wanted forever from Apple. And that's why they want to do this. And I get the feeling that if Apple said, fine, you know what, we will create it on this one computer and you can bring that phone in here and we will let you connect it to our computer on our turf and we will give you all the data on it and you can walk out with all the data because that's what you want. I get the feeling that the FBI would find that deficient in some way. And the FBI is going to say, no, this backdoored version of iOS, which is what we have wanted for lo these many years because we don't understand encryption and we think the internet is scary. We want you to give that to us.
Well, of course, they would
like that.
We want you
to make them install it on everything. What?
Of course, they would like Apple just to hand over this this hacked, essentially, version of iOS.
But I think that's what they want. I don't think they want this, we'll set it up in our office, that Apple will set it up at one infinite loop.
This has to go to court because only in court will the long-term implications be brought out for clarity and discussion.
Well, that's true. My question in this particular case is a more practical one. What is it that they think they're going to find? This is my question.
What they're looking for are messages and photos and really any other data that they could find on the devices that would lead to other people that may have been involved in that shooting incident.
Okay, so we're still on spec here.
Right. They don't know what they're going to find on the iPhone, but they reasonably believe that there's information on this locked iPhone that could be useful for their investigation.
Okay.
And it's so important that it's worth risking the security and safety of every Apple customer to get.
And what is it? How many do we have now? We're at 1 billion, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now the FBI says that this is a one-off thing because...
Of course they do.
Yeah, and the way the court order is written, it says that Apple will create this special version of iOS that is bonded to the ID for the one specific iPhone. Mm-hmm. So that means that you can't just take it and try and install it on another iPhone and it'll work. Right. And so that's a good safeguard. However, once you've created this, then it's just a matter of
swapping out that string.
There you go. Or just taking it out altogether. And then anytime the FBI or any other government agency has a phone, an mm-hmm. iPhone that they want to look into, then mm-hmm. they just go to Apple and say, plug it in, give us the mm-hmm. data. And then once this is done, at what point do we start seeing other government entities in the United States and around the world demanding access to this code, or mm-hmm. at least to the service of Apple pulling data off of iPhones? Mm-hmm. And then at what point does this code get out into the wild? And
you know that's going to take about an hour and a half.
Well, maybe it's... And maybe I'm being a little hyperbolic about the code getting out into the wild if Apple keeps everything in-house.
No,
but
no.
It can happen.
We've seen it. We've seen all kinds of stuff that has unofficially come out of Cupertino.
Well, the best intentions of Apple could be circumvented by somebody like Edward Snowden inside Apple who does not agree with Apple's stance, for example.
Right.
Sure. And, or how about someone that could really use a lot of money?
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, if you give someone millions of dollars and uh-huh. a plane ticket,
uh-huh.
it would be easy for them to be at least tempted to hand over this code and leave right. the country. And yeah, maybe yeah. I'm being hyperbolic, but still,
I have no doubt that in this day and age, the U.S. government would be more than happy to find someone who works at Apple in Cupertino and give them a passport and a blank plane ticket and buy them an island for a USB drive with some very interesting code on it.
This is why it has to be fast-tracked to the Supreme Court to make it a high-level discussion and argument about the
implications. A week ago, I would have agreed with you, John. I can't agree with you today.
Why not?
Because now the court's 4-4.
Oh, I have no doubt that it'll be a 6-2 decision in favor of Apple.
See, I want to say that, but in... This is the thing that always comes up for me when government and technology intersect, is that I know in my lifetime, which is maybe longer than I like to tell people, but still is not like that long in the grand scheme of things. In my lifetime, I have seen congressional hearings where a senator told the person who was testifying to the committee, please speak into the machine. And what they meant was a microphone. And if we have senators who I still think might actually believe that a camera will steal their soul, I don't want those guys legislating anything. And I don't want the Supreme Court to have to go through it either, because then it'll get legislated around.
Well, wait a minute. Back up a second. There's no guarantee that the Supreme Court will, if it ties 4-4, will be definitive. I mean, if the lower court rulings sides with Apple and the Supreme Court ties 4-4, the lower court ruling, presumably in Apple's favor, would still stand.
Yes, so, it would.
That is true. Yes. But my
now, what you would lose is the precedent.
Right. That's what I want. I want it to be 5-4 minimum. I don't want it to have to go back to the Supreme Court because it was a tie. I want it to go to the Supreme Court. If I ran the zoo, here's what I'd do. It would go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court would have 9 justices. And since I run things, all 9 of them are women. And then they would have the conversation. They would present the case to the court. The court would come back at whatever it is, but the court would come back with a majority opinion that it is bad for this to happen, because if anyone can get into an iPhone, anyone can get into an iPhone.
Well, that's the end. That's what was curiously missing from Tim's letter. Tim's letter talked about the end result, the security, the safety of the customers, as if it were a given that people agreed with that as the highest level priority. And perhaps he left it for the legal team to go into the further details of the implications. I mean, it's a great letter. Don't take me wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like the letter a lot. And there's only so much you can put into a letter like that. But what I thought was curious was is that there wasn't the sort of like home run statement of the global implications for the future and the protections and intents of the founding fathers. It just seemed to be like, you know, take it for granted that safety and security is a given, and a lot of people are going to quibble with that.
And go ahead and let them. But, you know, I guarantee you that every senator who has an iPhone, and we know there are at least a couple because one of them tried to get tech support in the middle of a congressional hearing.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Good times.
Aside, a number of them have iPhones, and I know that that number is more than like two. And I know that some of them are Democrats, and I know that some of them are Republicans. And I know that if the free world were allowed access to those iPhones, no. We'd hear all about national security and how you have to keep that data safe. And this is the thing that I wish more people would do, is swap out. When you hear stuff about security, when you hear these stories about how that are written and tailored specifically to scare people into giving things up, think about if this were me. Like, if the government wanted into my phone to find out what I was doing on an afternoon in December, how would I feel about that?
Well, Kelly, what you're talking about is a wide perspective by a large number of people that puts the argument into context. And as we've seen from the current politics, thunderbolts of sound bites are instead the operative factors.
Oh, I know.
So it's hard to get headway in a very intellectual, legal sense when people are throwing sound bites against each other as their definitive arguments.
Yeah, because
and
sound
then
bites
that distorts arguments. The whole argument.
Yeah, because
then you get fanaticism on one side of a sound bite and fanaticism on one side, and the deeper discussion doesn't happen. So that's why this has to go to court.
And it's because nuance is dead in current discourse, which is a problem for another day. We'll have to record a bonus episode.
You were here first.
Talk about that.
Nuance is dead.
Yes. But it's nuance, and nuance is the only thing that matters in this conversation, because there's more to it than bad guy have phone, good guy want in. Like, there is so much more to this than
that. That was awesome.
So, and I really want people to think about that. And I mean, this is the same thing that we've been seeing with headlines this week about, speaking of the Supreme Court, headlines about the Supreme Court, is that if the situation were reversed, would you be saying the same thing? If it were a much more left-leaning judge that had died, or if it had been a Republican president, would these people be saying the things that they're saying? And the answer to that is obviously not. And so that means it's not a good policy. Because if you can't apply it equally to everybody, and it only works as long as you get your way, which is, by the way, something that happened here in Oregon up until a week ago, that's a very different conversation. And so I feel like this is not something that is going to be applied fairly. I don't trust the government with their own data, and so I certainly do not trust them with mine. And the reason I trust Apple with mine is because Apple doesn't have it. So remember, like, in the 80s when people were like talking about year 2000 and the future, and, like, you know, we were all watching Jetsons reruns and stuff and talking about how awesome flying cars were going to be. We were so excited about how everybody knew everything about you because it made life so much easier. And then we got to a point where some of that actually started happening, and people were like, wait, no, I thought that was good, but now I don't think so, because, you know, you could use that, using that data could be for good, it could be for evil. And I find that kind of frustrating. So, like, it's something I've pointed out previously when we've done live events and stuff, is that it's interesting to me in the 21st century that Tim Cook walks out on stage at an Apple event and is like, we don't know crap about you, and we want to keep it that way. And they're proud of it.
A good point, Kelly. In the court case, Apple will demonstrate that the government hasn't been able to protect its own data. Mm-hmm. Why does it think it will be able to protect this technique that they want Apple to provide them?
Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind that right now everyone is focused on how this impacts iPhone owners and, by extension, iPad owners and iPod Touch mm-hmm. owners. But that's just the beginning. Once the precedent has been set that a technology company is expected and required to perform functions like this, mm-hmm. it's only a matter of time before your Android phone is subjected to this, and maybe your Amazon Echo is subjected to this,
and Windows phone.
And yeah, and your Windows phone, and then your computer, and it, mm-hmm. this Microsoft is a Pandora's a box.
Microsoft makes a phone?
They do.
Oh, I didn't hear.
And you never know if those two people are going to be up to any good or not.
Yeah. Jeff, this is a Pandora's box.
I'm glad you made a serious point out of that, because what I was going to say was, if Apple has to do this, you know, Samsung will follow them 3 months later.
You know, and your presentation of that is very funny, but it's also a serious concern.
It's also terrifying.
Right.
That's the problem. Because I'm with you guys. Like, a lot of focus is being put on this phone. And my concern is not necessarily this phone. It's the next one. And the next one. And the next one. And what the barrier of entry is going to be. In order to decide that a phone needs to go get scraped like this.
That's the crux of this issue. The FBI has to demonstrate that the access to the information on this phone, which they have no idea what it is, mm-hmm. is so paramount and so crucial that it outweighs every consideration there's ever been against privacy, legal precedent, security of Americans, for billions of users. That it outweighs all of that. And that would be a hard case to make.
Yes, it absolutely would.
Well, I think Apple's also going to be in a position where they have a very difficult case to make, because the idea that they could do all of this in-house mm-hmm. is a very appealing argument to the court system.
Yeah.
So it's totally possible that the courts will say, oh, Apple, you absolutely have to do this, but just do it in-house. Mm-hmm. And then at what point does Apple have to comply? I mean, at some point, if the government orders Apple to do it, they will simply have to do it. Mm-hmm. And I hope we don't actually get to that point. John, I hope you're right that this will go through the appeals process and that the court order will be overturned and Apple will not be compelled to create a version of iOS that opens up a major security flaw, so mm-hmm. they can do brute force attacks on passcodes. And not just because I don't want the government to be able to do this to my iPhone or my iPad, but what about my friends that use Android phones mm-hmm. from HTC or Samsung or whoever? Right. It doesn't matter. And what about my friends that are using Xbox with Kinect? Or are using an Amazon mm-hmm. Echo? I don't want any of these people to be subject to a system where there is no longer any level of security for their privacy.
Mm-hmm. And that for me is the problem too. Like, it doesn't for me. I'm not one of those, like, I have nothing to hide people. I'm a person who tries to do the right thing. I'm a person who tries to make sure that I'm on the up and up, whatever the situation is. I prefer to be honest. I prefer to, you know, I pay for music, whatever. But I don't want this to happen to anybody. And, you know, I mean, if they get in my phone, they're going to be just bored to tears because it's all Star Wars and Doctor Who,
you know,
and oh my God, Disney Tsum Tsum. Like, I might impress someone in the government with my high score and what level I am on Disney Tsum Tsum. But other than that, probably nothing. So, you know, this is one of those things that sort of concerns me because we've seen what the wiretap and the listening in and all of that, you know, we've seen what that was supposed to do. Because remember, some of the stuff that we've seen so far in this particular attack was plain old text messages, which are easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trackable and nobody put anything together until he pulled the trigger. And that's what we've seen before. It's what we saw in Paris, what we know about the Paris attacks. It was the same thing. It was plain old text messages because they're collecting everything so they can't focus on anything. And I don't like the idea of the government having my stuff sitting on a server somewhere so that the next Edward Snowden can pick it up and go, you know, and then one day I get a random text message that's like, hey, that's really awesome. I didn't know you could get that high a score with Ariel in Disney Tsum Tsum. You know, like, and, I don't need that.
Well, that's the basic issue, Kelly. The question is whether the government has a right to absolute power or whether the government has to be subject to the rights of the citizens and make a compromise. And in this case, mm-hmm. the FBI is saying we want to give ourselves the right to absolute power without question, without regard mm-hmm. to the Constitution. And that needs to be evaluated by the courts.
And I think the Constitution is a huge part of that. And I think that there's a you know, like I said, a larger concern. And, you know, the government doesn't automatically have a key to the back door of my house just to go through my cabinet once in a while and make sure I don't have anything interesting.
Oh, but they will after this precedent's been set.
Precisely.
They'll have to register a key with the government in case they need to come in. And
so think about that for a minute. Like, what if the key that they want is not to your phone? What if the key that they want is to your house? And you wake up in the middle of the night and you go to the bathroom and there's a dude in there in a suit rummaging through the cabinet just to see what's there. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I've seen that argument before. It's a good one.
All right.
It's terrifying. It should scare people. I want it to scare people. And I'm going to point out something specifically so that, Jeff, you can put this in the show notes. I wrote a how-to about a year ago, I think, about for how to set up a custom label for a contact in your contacts on your phone, which Apple still can't see, by the way, at least as of this recording. And it's for how you can set up a contact in your phone so that you can call members of Congress that represent you. And I'm going to point it out, and I'm going to hopefully get dig up a link so that we can put that in the show notes.
Yes, please.
Because it's important. And it's a very easy thing to do. You just go to congress.gov, and I think you give it your zip code, and it spits out who all of your representatives are in case you don't know. And you can also set up something called MegaVote, which I believe is everywhere. I get it for Oregon. And what MegaVote does is a couple times a week, once or twice a week, depending on how active Congress is at that moment, you can see what bills were voted on and how your representatives voted on those bills.
Cool. All right. Well,
it's awesome and it's easy.
And on that note, we have to wrap up because we are so out of time.
Okay.
So, Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Of course.
And John, thank you for being here.
You are very welcome.
And listeners, I'm curious, what do you think? Is the FBI's court order appropriate, or should this not be allowed to stand? Let me know. You can send me messages on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can send me emails, observations@macobserver.com, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I'll be checking all those places. And yeah, I'm really curious what you think. So, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.